once again to Nerds on the Rocks, episode 157. This week we're going to have a very, I guess, intimate podcast, as it's just Sam and I this week.
Hello. I always love, like, waiting to be introduced to a podcast, because you're sitting there on the ropes like, let me at him, coach, let me at him, I'm ready to come in. So, here I am, hi.
Hi. So, as always, we like to do some type of seasonal podcast when it comes to Christmas. And this year, thanks to Sam and sadly Justin, but he couldn't make it this week, we decided to do Die Hard 1 and 2 because you folks have never seen a Die Hard film. And I figured Die Hard is stupid dog. Die Hard is now usually cited as a lot of people's favorite Christmas movie. I don't necessarily hold. I think it's a fantastic movie. I think it's a good Christmas movie, but I don't say it as my favorite, even ironically.
What is your favorite Christmas movie?
I'm up as Christmas Carol.
Oh, all right, fair.
I haven't seen that one either,
but I do like the Muppets, so.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe I'll put that on my list next.
I can't even bother.
You don't have any energy anymore to deal with my incompetence.
No, not at all. But, yes, we're going to talk about, mostly going to focus on Die Hard, but Die Hard 2 is also a Christmas film, because Die Hard 2 is pretty much Die Hard 1 in an airport. So, yes, I guess to kind of get this underway,
they kind of acknowledge that, too, obviously.
Oh, yeah, which isn't a good thing, necessarily.
Yeah, it's kind of my vibe from it. How does the same shit happen to the same guy twice? So you're aware of how similar this movie is. All right.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we know we're pretty much aping ourselves, but we're just going to let you know that. Hold on a second. Okay, hopefully that will keep him quiet for a while.
Little did you know Earl was in the back murdering his dog. Hold on for a second. All right, and we're back. He won't be bothering us anymore.
He won't be bothering us anymore. So I guess it defeats the purpose to ask you how you got into this, because we forced you to watch this. So I guess what were your initial impressions? What were your initial thoughts on the first film?
So the movie started off, and like the first part of the movie, I was like, I don't see what the big deal is. So yeah, I went into it. Early impressions were I didn't really care for it all that much. Like, it was fine. It seemed like a fine action movie. And as the movie went on, I sort of, like, lightened up and got in the groove. And it was a lot of fun. It's still, people could get mad at me for saying this too, just an action movie, if that makes sense. Like, action movies can only inherently be so important. And be, like, it makes it easy to watch. It's a fun to watch movie. But, you know, like, when you think of top 10 movies of all time, you usually think of emotionally impactful stuff.
I don't necessarily agree with that, and I have the same stance on video games, because we have this discussion every year, like, with Game of the Year and stuff like that. It's like, what is, you know, I think a good movie is a good movie no matter what. I mean, this is a well-crafted movie.
Okay, yeah, I'm not saying it's not good. I'm saying it's not, maybe I need to clarify this. It's not my top 10.
That's to be fair.
Because I go to movies to have fun, right? And Die Hard, okay. It is a fun movie. I have seen more fun movies that I prefer more. I like things that mix in more comedy with my fun movies. But Die Hard was I guess I need to finish my little impressions real quick. A very good action movie, and I appreciated it as what it was. As a moment in history with a lot of practical effects, with a lot of cool action scenes that were a little over the top, but plausible, which, from what I've seen in the later movies, it gets away from. Like, not necessarily plausible, like, sure, okay, you kick C4 down an elevator shaft, what are the odds that you blow it up at the right time? But that's at least, in the realm of physics, theoretically possible for somebody to do. And I thought that was interesting, whereas you get to Live Free or Die Hard, and he jumps on the back of a spinning plane and shoots the pilot in the head or whatever. So I like how kind of grounded, in a weird fantasy sense, that the first Die Hard film was, and I really appreciated all the practical effects and stuff that did for it.
Yeah, and it is extremely grounded. I was going to say, you didn't find it funny, because you mentioned that you like a little bit of comedy.
Oh, yeah, okay. It is kind of funny.
It is only kind of funny, okay. Interesting.
What?
I guess as I mean I don't really I mean if you know me, you know Die Hard is one of my favorite all-time favorite films. It is probably I think my all-time favorite action movie. It just does a lot of things right to me, and it has a great blend of action, humor.
Okay.
And
what do you like about it that makes it your favorite action film?
I think it's just that it's never. I don't want to say it's not, like you said, it does go over the top, but not too over the top. But I think that it's reserved in the fact that it's not an all-out action film, which I think a lot of the later films do become.
Yeah.
Where there are moments where he's just, he isn't a person who's kind of, he isn't necessarily always a proactive hero. Sometimes he's kind of playing defense, or he's working from behind, and it works out at times. I mean, just to skip ahead a bit, one of the big scenes in the film, which comes later on, is like him after he stepped on the gases, and he's just in the bathroom smoking a cigarette and talking to Al on the radio. It's not a huge action. It's not an action scene. It's just a moment of him being a character, of him being a human.
Yeah.
He's a guy way in over his head who's just trying to do his best to survive. And
that is a good point. Grounded for an action movie is a very good way to describe that. Like, it all seems theoretically possible that it could happen to this guy. So maybe he, you know, takes down people a lot bigger than him, but he at least kind of outsmarts them and out-toughs them. He's actually a really good example of the, like, typical American hero, but he's not a hulking super monster. Like, I mean, he's a buff dude, don't get me wrong, but he's not a Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger. They do reference Arnold Schwarzenegger in the movie, too, right?
They reference a lot of things.
Lying about him. Yeah.
They reference a lot of things in the movie, which, you know, it's one of those things because even his catchphrase, not necessarily a reference, but, you know, it was the exchange between him and Hans. And I think that's the other thing that I love about the film is the villain, Hans Gruber.
Yeah,
what were you going
to
say?
Sorry, it was really nice to learn where that. It's nice to learn where that catchphrase came from after seeing the later Die Hard movies. It's a very weird catchphrase whenever he repeats it. You're like, okay, I guess that means something. And you see, like, oh, he called him a cowboy. Okay. Now it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes complete sense in the first film. Not necessarily. It's one of those things that needs to be done in the other film, but it doesn't make sense because here it's a specific comeback to an exchange. Everything else, it's sort of used as a catchphrase, which doesn't make any sense. But we'll get to that again with Die Hard 2, because Die Hard 2. Again, skipping ahead just a bit, one of those films that I caught on TV really one time, and they, you know, it was TBS, and they can't curse, so it was, I think it was Yippee-Ki-Yay, Mother Trucker. So it's the weirdest thing, because they have to, like, no, I don't even think it was Mother Trucker, because that sounds too similar, so they have to ad-lib something. But it's not the guy's soundtrack that they get in years later to just kind of voice over something that comes out of his mouth. So it's really weird. But yeah, like I say, and the other thing I love about it is the villain. I think Hans Gruber, again, has a very plausible plan. It's, you know, like a lot of times with action films, you get these plans that are just way too grandiose and large. This is really small, it's really simple, and it seems to have all of its bases covered.
Yeah. I did love the psych out where he says, all right, we need all these political prisoners free, and he just starts messing with them like that. And it's about money. That's all it's ever about. That was interesting. I thought that was cool. But a lot of good moments in that movie.
Yeah, there's a ton of great moments, which, again, why I love it. I guess kind of going back, and, you know, this is one of the first movie podcasts we're doing, so bear with me, this format's going to be awful. But I guess kind of kicking it off, and this I will transition with saying another thing I love about this film, and really the sign of any good to great film to me is that they are – everything they set up pays off eventually without seeming forced. The first time you meet him, he's on an airplane, and he's nervous. A lot of people are nervous, nervous when they fly. And the guy next to him is like, you know, once you land, kind of rub, you know, like, wipe your feet into the carpet, and, you know, it relaxes you and stuff like that. Really, in most other movies, that could be a throwaway scene just to kind of introduce the character. But it explains why he's barefoot throughout the rest of the film and why he eventually gets gas shot up on him. Because he does do this when he's stressed, and that's when everything goes down.
Yeah. Good little character moments then.
Yeah. What did you think of, I guess, him getting there, like that, the airport scene, and then him in Argyle, and I guess the scene with him, when he's finding out that his wife uses her maiden name.
That was, I don't know, I knew I was going in to watch an action movie, and it was fine, and it was a good setup, but at the time it was a little boring to me. I don't know, because I'm like, yeah, Die Hard's this great action movie, and that's all it's ever been propped up to be to me, and there's 30, 40 minutes of setup in that movie, so maybe not 40 minutes, but there is what seems like a long time of setup before the action starts happening. So it was interesting, but went on for a little bit too long for my taste.
Interesting. I feel like an action movie, I feel like any movie really kind of needs that time to set up.
Yeah, it...
You are right in the fact that it doesn't, like the terrorists don't show up for about the first 15, 20 minutes. But at the same time, you have to develop a lot of those relationships because... Like, Holly and John don't share a lot of time on the screen, and you have to kind of get the crux of their relationship.
Yeah.
The same thing with the organization, because...
And maybe that is a good thing that... I don't know, I was going to say, movies now have found ways to deliver that information in quickly, or in something... deliver it in exciting ways. Like, it felt very, I'm going to explain the exposition to you, to me. Whereas, like, did you see World War Z this year?
Yes.
That movie had a great opening to it. The opening sequence without zombies was 5 minutes long. It told you everything you needed to know and immediately went right into one of the most intense action sequences that has ever been in a... I loved the opening 15 minutes to World War Z. I thought it was one of the best opening movies to while ever. I'm saying that's a way that you do exposition and not take 30 minutes to do it.
Well, okay, I'm kind of curious to know, what do you feel or felt was kind of overexplained or was too much exposition?
I had all the scenes with his wife and the, I don't know, like, I get that you, it is kind of weird to explain, because you do need to explain the relationship, you need to show the significance of it, but there was a whole lot of time of him and his wife getting to the building, talking to the limo driver, like, I don't know, the scenes just went on a bit long for all of it. I'm fine with it, it just went on a bit long for me.
I just feel like... And, you know, I'm coming at this from somebody who loves the film, so of course I'm trying.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess my takeaway from it is that it's because he doesn't spend any significant time on screen with anybody else throughout the rest of the film, that if you don't get it in at the beginning, there's no place else to get it. And
That's true, and it does humanize him, so I'll give you that.
It not only humanizes him, it humanizes a lot of people at the party. Because without the introduction of Holly and Mr. Takagi and Elias and stuff like that, it would have just felt bad if it's just him and his wife. And I think this is one thing I noticed about Die Hard 2, and again, we'll get into it, is that it's also important when you kill off these characters, because like, if Mr. Takagi was just a random person that they pull from the thing, it's like, oh, okay, whatever. Like, I was watching Die Hard, the villain has to kill somebody to make the impact for him to show John's feeling at some point. And in Die Hard 2, what they do is they blow up an entire airplane full of people, but it's an airplane that's introduced for the sole purpose of being blown up, so you don't feel any connection. It's gonna sound terrible, but you don't feel bad because you don't know any of the characters on that plane. It's just...
Yeah, that's fair.
That plane could have been filled with chickens.
Right.
But here, you kind of get an idea of Mr. Takagi, and it was one of my favorite scenes in the film. It's when Hans is, you know, talking men's fashion with him, and he's like, you know, like, he's like being this urban douche while he's trying to rob them. But it's so awesome, again, because it's a villain who seems very calm and collected, and he does remain calm and collected throughout most of the film.
Yeah, but yeah, as you said earlier, he's absolutely a great villain. I loved Hans Gruber in this. He hams it up a lot, but he hams it up in a way that makes it very fun, you know? Like, I don't want to compare him to Skyfall's villain, but I don't know, he is kind of like Skyfall's villain, actually. I mean, that's where they got some of the inspiration from. Like, he's over the top, but in a fun way, I guess.
Yeah.
A lot of villains ham it up way too hard in movies, and he had a good balance of... kind of human, kind of crazy, but always in control, and made a fun guy to watch.
Yeah, yeah. Fun, and, you know, again, it's one of those presences that Alan Rickman is just amazing in most things he does. Harry Potter, Galaxy Quest. I'm sure there are other stuff people are going to be upset at me for not naming first, But
that YouTube video where he flips over a table, fantastic. You ever seen that?
No, I haven't.
It's just Alan Rickman flipping over a table in slow motion. It's like 4 minutes long and him getting really... It's wonderful. You'll look it up sometime.
You have Actually, which is another Christmas movie a lot of people love. So we set it up. John's up at the party. I always find it weird and hokey that they're the only people in the entire building, which is like 40 stories.
Yeah.
Like even if it's a Christmas party, I would imagine most organizations would have their Christmas party around the same. But that's just a minor pet peeve. Okay, so you set it up. It's about 20 minutes in, and finally, it's the terrorists enter the picture. We mentioned Hans. What do you think of Ekizakis?
I don't know. They seem kind of throwaway to me as a little group. I mean, they're all... I don't know. They're okay, I guess. A few standouts, like the I don't know any of their names, so maybe that's.
I was going to point out that the only one I know is Carl, which is the guy, the big bad, like the henchman, that you know is upset at him for killing his brother and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He stands
out, and then the Merkel looking character.
Merkel.
the black nerd guy.
Urkel.
Who's Merkel? Urkel. Yeah. That's what you reminded me of. I don't know.
Theo.
Yeah.
Yes. And those were pretty much the only two. I'm sure others were named, but yeah, those were the two big ones. Carl was the one who, he was kind of the enforcer, and Theo was the tech dude.
Yeah, and they were both fun in their own way, but
yeah.
Other than that, they're just sort of filler.
Yeah, I wasn't sure like why. Like, Theo made sense. I don't really know what Carl does. I was really kind of curious how much resistance they expected, because it's like a 10-man team, and as far as I know, like, three of them have actual jobs to do with the robbery.
Right. The others are there to hang out and get shot.
Yeah, I'm sure there was something to do. I mean, maybe they just needed out of, you know, transportation and other stuff, but yeah, really, throughout the course of the film, like, oh, you three of them do anything of... Like, Hans really doesn't do anything.
Yeah. He just sort of gives orders. But yeah,
but I guess that's what happens when you're the leader of the bunch. So yes,
and there were a lot of scenes like giving Hans the gun without any bullets. Like I saw that coming, but when I saw that scene, I realized that that's a trope that's been used since Die Hard and probably wasn't really used before them. So it's interesting to see where all of these action movie tropes come from, and they all come from there. What it looks like.
Yeah, and that was actually—I think that was a great scene, and another great character scene, because they're both trying to one up each other. Like John intentionally kind of backs him against the employee roster so he can name check him.
Yeah.
That was a nice scene, and his American accent is really bad but good American accent.
Yeah, oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a fun scene, but yeah, I guess the first major thing is, well, I guess we didn't mention this, and we really don't have to go trot by trot with this,
right.
But the top, there's like three or four floors in the building that are under construction, which is where most of the action takes place, or where most of where John hides out throughout the course of the film, because other than that, it would be really hokey if they just kept on missing each other.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is kind of funny.
Yeah.
Out of 40 floors, they always just happen to find each other.
Yeah.
I will say, kicking the C4 down the shaft was a little ridiculous that he found the exact floor. Like, that was the one thing I looked at and went, you're stretching a little bit here, Die Hard, but okay.
Well, I was always under the impression that he didn't. He just dropped it down the shaft and it flew up.
Okay.
Because it even shoots back up to him and he's stories above it. So it's not like he was aiming at a specific... I mean, he was aiming at a specific floor, but like even when they show outside, like it builds up like a good three or four floors of the building.
Okay, so you're saying he didn't intend to exactly hit them. It was just sort of a... Intend to hit them, but it was a... Okay.
How would he know what floor they were on?
Yeah. And also that much C4 would not do exactly that unless there's something else in the building.
Yeah,
but, little things you can overlook.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like, I mean, I think the bigger thing is I don't think dodging out of the way would have really prevented him from being burnt alive by that fireball.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there are little things you have to overlook, so that's why it's kind of grounded, not completely grounded, but...
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, a lot of it makes sense. He doesn't do anything too extreme. Well, okay, again, I don't... What I mean, he doesn't do anything too extreme. I meant, like, he doesn't do anything ridiculous. Like, you mentioned, like, the, you know, jumping on the jet fighter.
Yeah.
Driving an 18-wheeler. But, you know, stuff like he bungee jumps off the roof using a fire hose or something like that.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's a bit hokey, but it works.
Yeah, they're a little ridiculous, but it's not nearly as over the top as the later films get, was my point.
Yeah, yeah, which is one of the big problems with the later films. I think a lot of people just took that away, I think a big part of this movie and a big part of why I enjoyed it so much, again, is that he's not a proactive hero. Everything kind of happens, or he's kind of pushed into a role where he needs to do something. Where in the later films, he becomes the antagonist. He becomes the aggressor. He's the guy who's going after everything. He's the guy who's, you know, pushing down doors and stuff like that, which can work, but it never really seemed to be the character that was on this right here. Like, I'm not going to say he's a good cop, because he has that one line about, like, you know, where he's like, you're not going to kill me, you're a cop. And he's like, yeah, my captain keeps on telling me that as well. But yeah.
I found the line. It's Yippee-ki-yay, Melon Farmer.
Ah.
And then Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon.
You've got to have network censoring.
Yeah.
Maybe one day we'll do an episode on that if we can find enough good examples. So, I mean, for the middle part of the movie, it's just him kind of offing. I think he offs, like, one or two bad guys before the cops get involved. What do you think of the police officers on the outside? And what did you think of that setup?
It was interesting to have police officers as the bad guy, like, the antagonist as well. So I thought that was funny to have... like, John is alone, basically, in this movie, and it helps drive home the point that, no, he's going to solve this by himself, that no one's there to help him, so you make the cops dicks, basically. So
well, some of them, I mean, Al was pretty helpful.
Yeah, yeah. It was helpful cop.
Yeah, it was one helpful cop, and it is funny, because they have, like, I mean, granted, yes, most of it is the terrorist knows what they're going to do, so they kind of plan ahead, but they have, like, these elaborate plans that just get so cut short so quickly, so often, like the one with the tanks and stuff, and how to just get demolished and stuff like that. And at some point, I do feel bad. At the same time, it's just really weird to see them all kind of line up on the outside, not really doing anything.
Yeah,
they even start to take bets with
bets about when John McClane will die.
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty funny.
It's funny, but at the same time, you're thinking that's kind of morbid.
Right? Like, aren't you supposed to be the one solving this situation? Again, that's the thing with Die Hard 2, is like, you're kidding me? You've got this guy is clearly a national hero. It comes to the airport, it's like, those guys are terrorists, I've dealt them before. This guy's an idiot, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, no, that's exactly the plot of the first movie. Come on, you think you'd know to trust him by this point.
Well, they mention it, like, oh, I read about the Nakatomi incident in the paper.
Right, yeah, and also that he's still a cop, it's like, I guess I did realize it, but that the Die Hard movies all take place in the same timeline, the same universe. I always figured they were, I don't know, obviously, duh, they do, but it seems like more should happen in the span of those movies. And it gets less, again, not supposed to be super believable when you're breaking, I don't know, whatever. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they do take place, and I mean, it would be a nice bit of continuity if they were good, because we always see briefly that he has two kids in this film, a little girl and a little boy, and they become bigger parts of the franchise with 4 and 5.
Yeah,
a nice bit of continuity if the films were good.
Yeah, the most recent one.
Yeah, we won't talk.
And at that point, I was like, oh, he has a kid. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, but. You see, because there's a fourth element that comes into play, which is the press. And I find it funny rewatching it now, because this is how we treat the media now, where everything is just becomes a circus and mm-hmm. no story's too private. I mean, just kind of using something more topical more recently was the Sandy Hook, where you had that whole debate about should we release the tapes, and a lot of people were trying to justify it, like, oh, it's going to give the parents closure and stuff. Like, no, it's not. It's just for you to share these tapes to kind of get a ratings boost.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, it's this notion that you do stuff for the greater good, but you just kind of paste the wall with coverage of everything that's happening and kind of for any, you know, piece of a story that would make sense. And again, you know, I guess jumping back and forth between Die Hard 2, another huge coincidence that the wife ends up on the same plane as this guy.
Right.
And they don't find out until they're about to end.
Yeah.
Like, it's from L.A. to Washington, D.C., which is like a four-hour flight. How the hell is he arguing about being in first class, not being in first class, at the end of the flight?
Wait a minute. L.A. to Washington, D.C. would be a lot longer than 4 hours, first
How
of all.
How would it be?
I don't know, but my flight to Seattle was 4 hours. And that's from Houston to Seattle, so I have to imagine that...
Well, we're not going to get into this too much. It's 5.5 hours from L.A. to New York.
Really?
So, yeah.
Okay. I didn't... Well, maybe I was going against the wind or something. Anyway, keep going. This is a very minor point. I was curious.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, you know, that's another hokey coincidence, because they have to bring back everybody who's alive from the first film to be in the second film in some capacity. Like, Al gets a cameo. I don't even get the point of his cameo. Like, John calls him fax and sees somebody's fingerprints, and that's it. Like, yay, you called this guy in for one day of shooting.
Yeah. By the way, 6 hours. Okay, going on.
you had to check that?
Yep, I had to look it up.
Okay. So 6 hours. Same point. He was on the flight for 5.5 hours then, and he decides to complain about first class at the end, the tail end of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, I don't know. Less grounded was the second movie, which makes it... That's ground that's been covered by a lot of people at this point, but oh well.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's not something... It's something I hold against a lot of films. A lot of sequels, you can do a sequel that's... a recent example is The Hunger Games: Catch and Ice. Structurally is very similar to the original Hunger Games, but they are smart enough to kind of play with what happened in the first one and build off of that and the similarities, because it is a crappy situation to be in, where Die Hard 2 just kind of pokes fun at the fact that, oh, I'm in another elevator shaft on another Christmas.
And it's yeah. Like, it's the difference between Assassin's Creed 2 and, oh gosh, this analogy would have worked a lot better if I could remember the name of the game. Crackdown. Assassin's Creed 2 and Crackdown 2. Well, like, Assassin's Creed 2 built out this world and, like, took the same ideas but improved upon them and made a better thing. And Crackdown 2 just sort of made the same game again with, like, three changes.
Yeah. I think the major difference there is it's a different studio, but...
It was an analogy.
I get
that. I was
that.
Trying to relate it.
I get that. But, yeah. So, jumping back to Die Hard 1. So, yeah, you have the cops on the outside, you have the reporters, you have the terrorists, and you have John. Along the way, a lot of people do get off, both good and bad guys. I guess the two major good guys, or heroes, or whatever, supporting characters, would be Mr. Sakagi and Ellis. What did you think of their death scenes?
Huh?
Mr. Takagi, the...
yeah.
What did you think of, like, his death scene, I guess?
Okay, I was trying to figure out who Ellis was. Got it.
Ellis?
Yeah, he was the dick, right?
Yes.
Yeah, his was interesting. I thought his character was funny. Mr. Takagi, I like the fact that they talked about fashion, and that he just got shot anyway, no matter what he did. But that Mr. Takagi seemed more like, I've seen this in movies a whole bunch, right? He seemed more like the stubborn rich guy is not going to tell you what you want to know, so he gets shot. Like, okay, that's a thing they've done in movies. But the guy who pretended to be on their side ended up getting killed anyway, not knowing what he was involved in, that was actually kind of new to me and interesting.
Oh, really? I feel like that would have been the opposite. I feel like that's more of a common trope where it's like, oh, I'm going to, you know, I'm looking out for my best interest, and it backfires on you in some capacity.
I guess. I don't know. It seemed more interesting to me than the other one. Maybe I'm just I just watch movies backwards from everyone else. But
no, I think in this case, because Ellis isn't a bad guy. I think what makes Ellis death so interesting is that he thinks he's doing right. He thinks he's doing good, and you know, like you have John doing his best to try to protect him. Like he knows either way he's dead.
Yeah, and it made it. It was interesting, too, because everybody on the outside could hear that conversation and thought John was a bad guy there. And I thought that was the most interesting element to it.
Well, no, I mean, I think the cops did. I think a lot of people, especially, you know, like Al got it. Like, he understood.
Yeah,
that.
Al got it, but I mean the cops, sorry.
Yeah. Well, I think, especially with, I forget the cop's name, but I think that was after John had called him a dickhead or something like that. Like, from up here, that's gonna get you in charge of jack shit. Dwayne T. Robinson.
Okay.
And I think he was just trying to put an end to say, look, you see, I was right all along.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, because, you know, like, a lot of his decisions look dumb, but you always want to save face, and I'm sure, I don't know, you're probably not old enough for that yet, but I'm sure when you do get to that point, you're always going to find somebody in their job like that, somebody who's always wants to save face no matter how terrible of a job they did.
That's fair. Yeah, but I mean, I guess it was kind of cliched that you knew who's going to die when he said, I'm a salesperson, I got this. So like, okay, obviously you're going to die and it's going to backfire. But it was fun watching it happen.
Yeah, and it also kind of goes into John's thinking, and he's a man that really has no options. Like, he can't give himself up. We've seen that the cops can't get in, and these terrorists are out more than they had on. I mean, ultimately, their big plan was to blow up the roof to make it they died in an explosion while they got away dressed as EMTs, I guess.
Yeah.
Great plan. I mean, as he says, when you steal $60, you can hide. When you steal $6 million, they will find you or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you know, again, Hans is a thinking man's criminal. He has the end game in mind. Everything was kind of plotted and planned and stuff like that. He just didn't count on John being there to kind of hurt this so much.
Yep. One other little thing is it always falls back in the hole. If you just shot the guy when you had the chance, it wouldn't be a problem anymore. Like, at the end of the movie, they could have just shot John at any point in the last exchange there. And ended it, but movies do that a lot, and that's hard to hold against a movie. I just thought it was funny.
It's hard to hold against a film, but I think at the same time, it wasn't like what I always find that weird when it's kind of like a hostage situation. Like, you're trying to kill somebody, and eventually you get them down. So you just put the gun to their head, and you tell them, get up, just go.
Yeah,
right.
Just shoot him. I mean, you'd save yourself a lot of trouble.
And in this case, I felt it was kind of a mutual respect, like, you really fucked me over here. Because, I mean, they both just kind of start acting really crazy.
That was funny.
Yeah, it just seemed like, you know, like, we after all this, we're finally here. Something, it's going to end now. And stuff like that. I thought it was a nice little scene. The one thing that ruins the ending for me is the CG fall.
It's
really terrible.
Yeah, I don't know why it was CG either. You could have
pushed him out of a window.
Well, I mean, I guess you need him falling, but yeah, I don't know. Good point. I guess high speed cameras weren't super easy to come by in 1980. Where were they?
Yeah. And it's really the only big use of CG that I know in the film, or the one that stands out.
The helicopter crash, I'm guessing, or was that a mini? I guess that probably.
It probably was a miniature. It does. I mean, as far as I know, it doesn't stand out. The CG fall just stands out, though. Because,
okay.
Like, you could tell it's not him on the background and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I also thought it was funny that if it was a smaller guy, the taping a gun to your back wouldn't work. It only works because how big his shoulders are, which I think is kind of funny.
I was also going to say, I mean, that's pretty damn good because you have to know how far you can stretch, which I imagine.
Right? I just tried that. As I'm talking to you, I, like, lean my hand to the middle of my back, see if I can reach it. I'm like, I don't know that I could pull something off taped from my back that quickly to shoot anybody with. That's a hard motion to make.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not as funny.
I'm sure there's a need to see it out there with him trying to get it properly on his back. Just him like taping and retaping so to see if he can reach it or not.
Right.
But yeah, anything else you want to mention about Die Hard, I guess? I think we've covered all the major stuff. I mean, was there any action scene that really stood out to you?
The stuff with the glass was cool. It wasn't necessarily an action scene, but that's probably my... That was one of the good ones. And then chaining the big German guy. You said his name earlier. I forgot it. Wrapping his head around the chain, lifting him up and slamming into the wall. I'm just like, fuck yeah. So I'm sort of like clapping in that movie. I'm like, that was awesome. That was a really good action bit. Of course, he didn't die from it, which is kind of weird. But
yeah, that's kind of weird. You kind of forgive it because in all the hustle and bustle, you don't really pay attention to that. But yeah, you're like, how did he survive? Or, I don't know, whatever it was.
Yeah, whatever. I guess he had a thick neck or something.
Yeah. The other one I like, well, it's twofold. Mostly because of how it gets everybody involved into this, is the one in the boardroom where he shoots the guy under the table.
Yeah.
Because I think he says, the next time you get an opportunity, shoot first. He's like, thanks for that advice. But really, the reason that's important is because he tosses him out of the building. And that's how Al kind of gets involved. And that's how the cops come and stuff like that. And they, again, you know, just because I hope when they set up something and pay it off, naturally. Is like, when Al's talking to Dwayne or whatever. What about the guy who came out the window?
You made that mix up. You basically just called him The Rock.
Well, I mean, that there's also Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah, that's true.
The two FBI agents, not related.
I assumed you just mixed his name up with The Rock, anyway.
But yeah, he's like, so what about the guy who fought the window onto my car? Could have just been an upset stock investor or something
like, stupid. Oh, come on, really? There's a guy standing up there waving at you, through whatever. I don't want to nitpick Die Hard too much, but that's what I've been doing for the last 30 minutes, but anyway.
Well, I mean, this, that's
every action movie's nitpickable, that one makes up for it by being grounded enough to where it's still fun.
I think most films are nitpickable, to use that word, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
I think my thing is, and this has always kind of been any type of entertainment, is if you play by the rules you establish, at no point do I think Die Hard cheats the system.
That's true.
Even something as simple as his clothes gets dirty and grimy as he goes on. It's not like he keeps on in a pristine white t-shirt the entire time.
Right. That's a good point. They stick to the rules they establish. I like that.
Yeah. His injuries stay consistent. He still has the bloody feet. He's shot in his shoulders. So, you know, he's pretty banged up and injured and hurt by the end of it all. And at no, you know, like, some action films, it's just like, we can't, you know, our superhero has to remain strong. And at some point, they get the mid-movie costume change so that they can, you know, remain keen and proper. And this is like a guy who's been through hell by the end of it.
Yeah. So, you said this at the very beginning, Die Hard was one of your top, like, movies and top action film. What are your other action films that you play? Like, name two or three other ones that you place under Die Hard, and why?
Under this is a loaded question. It honestly depends on action, the type of action as well. I'm a huge fan of like Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. I know a lot of people prefer Raiders of the Lost Ark. I have Sean Connery as his dad.
Okay. Those are all flirting with the term action movie, but good point.
Yeah, I mean, that's more of an adventure serial type deal. But yeah, I mean, it has action in it, but I would cast it more in the adventure genre. Okay. Terminator, the original.
I gotta watch that one next, I guess.
Some people kind of put that into the sci-fi. It can be sci-fi horror thriller more than
I think sci-fi is just if you're doing sci-fi right, it's an add-on to a genre type. The genre should not just be sci-fi, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, I think...
Star Trek is an action sci-fi movie, or the most recent Star Trek is an action sci-fi movie. Because
the series were more of a drama or a comedy or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, you know, a lot of them would be like superhero movies, which I still, at this point, I kind of cast them as their own genre, stuff like that. I'm sure there are other ones that I'm drawing a blank on, and I am going to, I'm going to kick myself when I think of it afterwards. But yeah, Die Hard, Indiana Jones.
You just like the 80s, huh? Or like the, I guess Jones is earlier than, was it earlier than 80s?
No,
Jones is like 82, right?
It was 80s as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I have 80s action movies. 80s action movies just had a certain energy to them. And as much as I love Die Hard does kind of influence the 90s a lot. Because Die Hard becomes a template. You know, you get Passenger 57, you get Air Force One. Air Force One is another one of my favorite movies. Let me guess, you've never seen that either.
I'd never heard of those two movies.
You've never heard of Air Force One? With Harrison Ford? Well, I guess that makes sense because you know Harrison Ford for being famous for one franchise. To call back that from a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. So no, I don't realize. Like I, no, yeah. If you told me what movies are Harrison Ford in, Air Force One would not even register to me.
It's a great movie.
Like if you said Air Force One is a movie, I could be like, okay, yes, I've heard the movie title Air Force One, but I knew nothing else about it. And I'd also think of the shoes before I think of the movie, or the song, or
not
anyway.
The President's Plane?
Well, the President's Plane, yeah. That, sure.
Is way down your list, huh?
Yeah, that movie's down there.
It is actually the President's Plane in this film. Another good Harrison Ford film is The Fugitive. Maybe we'll do a
I know Harrison Ford from Blade Runner, so there's that.
Yes, it's a sad thing his career ended 30-some-odd years ago then. Maybe we'll do a Harrison Ford podcast sometime in the new year.
Make me watch all those. Great.
That would be fun. But yeah, I guess real quick, your thoughts on Die Hard 2. You said you didn't watch the entire thing, right?
Right.
Where did you end up, or did you just skip around?
I was just watching this afternoon while I was making chicken. I ended up, you know, they didn't blow up the plane yet, so I didn't get to there.
Wow, you did not get far at all.
Really? I thought I got like an hour or something into it.
Is it that far in?
I think I was at least an hour into it.
Okay, no, okay, I just watched this last night, which is really sad. Okay, so that's after they ambushed them on the walkway, right?
Yes.
Okay, so yeah, I guess that would probably be like around the halfway mark. Yeah, because he does that right after that scene.
Yeah, I definitely got the ambushing him the walkway and the revolving floor. Again, cool action set pieces, the revolving floor, spinning the gun to him. Okay, that's kind of neat. But, yeah.
Yeah, it just doesn't, like, I don't think Die Hard 2 is a bad movie. It just doesn't feel like anything special because it treads so much similar grounds. Like, it's different.
Granted, I didn't finish it, so take my opinion with a grain of salt, but I kind of compare them from Clerks 1 to Clerks 2. Like, Clerks 1 is a very special movie. It did something different. Its comedy came from its griminess. You know, as I always said with Clerks, you can see the cigarette burns on the film as it goes by. You can, like, you feel dirty after watching that movie, but it makes it unique and interesting for it. Clerks 2 is, like, just another comedy movie. That kind of seems like what Die Hard to Die Hard 2 is. It's like, Die Hard is a unique action movie for what it is, and Die Hard 2 just made another action movie like it. It's like something that's already been done 100 times before. Not that Die Hard was the first action movie by any means, but...
No, but it's kind of the first one that... I mean, I'm not going to say it's the first one, but it kind of popularized that X in X, like a hero in a confined space over a certain amount of time. Like I said, that's...
He was a horror movie monster. He was Batman, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean...
Okay, so those are two very different things, and I should perhaps... Maybe I don't need to explain my thinking there. So that was a really big jump, but you know what I'm talking about.
Again, Air Force One is Die Hard in an airplane. Passenger 57 is Die Hard in an airplane. Speed is Die Hard on a bus. Well, somewhat like Die Hard on a bus. Under Siege is Die Hard on a ship and stuff like that. when you say Die Hard, you know,
it's Monster in the House, and he was the monster in the house.
Yeah, so it did popularize that. I mean, the big two movements of the 90s, I guess, would be that and the buddy cop film. After Lethal Weapon success, you got a lot of films in that vein. As I guess, you know, Lethal Weapon, 48 Hours and stuff like that. You got Rush Hour. A lot of those kind of buddy cop films were a big thing in the 90s.
Oh, Rush Hour. You're getting into my era, finally.
Yes, your era of 1999, I believe.
Then you go into Fight Club and The Matrix, and like, I got all those. I'm caught up on that part.
Okay. I mean, just for the record, I was like 3 when this film came out, and I didn't mention this. The first time I seen Die Hard and Die Hard 2 and Die Hard with the Vengeance was actually when Die Hard 4.0, if Real Die Hard, was coming out, which would have been like 2006, 2007. So it's a recent thing for, or a recentish thing for me. So it's not like, you know, a lot of times people say, oh, it's just nostalgia speaking. It's a film I saw nearly 20 years after it came out, and I fell in love.
Gotcha.
But the same thing with Indiana Jones.
Okay. I was going to say, were your parents like movie buffs or something? Because my parents were sports people. I didn't care for movies for much of my life growing up.
No, I got into it. The only thing that I've really taken from my parents as far as films go is I'm a huge James Bond fan because my dad was, and that's something I kind of carried on.
Okay.
Other than that, we weren't huge movie people because I just had a huge family. Movies weren't a thing we did often.
Gotcha.
Which is probably why I made it up as an adult.
Fair. So my favorite action movies, which we didn't get to, I would probably put my favorite action movie at the top as, and again, I'm stretching the rules a bit, but I think Hot Fuzz was the most entertaining movie that I've watched that had it. It was.
See, I'm really curious about that one for you, because Hot Fuzz is one of those films that you get and know so much more if you grew up on 80s action movies.
Right? I know. It's kind of weird. That's the whole thing, is it's making fun of 80s action movies, but on its own, it was very enjoyable to me. And
very enjoyable on its own. I just mean you get a lot more if you actually know what it's referencing at the time.
Yeah, that's like, so a quick aside, I saw Cabin in the Woods and didn't understand it until the last 10 minutes of the movie. Like, no, not even the last 10 minutes of the movie. I thought, because I saw it on 420, so I assumed everybody was stoned. I didn't realize that it was a comedy until the very end of the movie. I thought it was a really poorly done horror movie, and then the movie ended, and so I'm driving home like, oh, it's the, oh, because the hair dye was the, oh my god! And all those monsters are from other horror movies, oh my god! Because I hadn't seen those. So I was...
Have you ever seen the Scream franchise?
Yes. Yes, I've seen most of them. I don't think I've seen the first one.
Okay, I was going to ask, what did you think of those? Because, again, that's kind of spoofing. I don't know if you grew up on, like, 80s horror films.
Absolutely not. The first horror movie I watched was Dead Silence, about the mannequin dolls that come to life. Well, unless you count now, I'm not going to count. The 2004 Dawn of the Dead remake was the first. Yeah, that's not really a horror movie, but...
I'm really going to have a show with you, because I'm really curious how some of these parodies work without knowing the source material, or like, was there kind of...
They're just really well written.
But I mean, if it's a good... I should clarify that, and I think we should wrap up after this, because I hold this against any of those X movies, epic movie, dance movie, superhero...
Oh, those are all absolutely awful.
Yeah, because those specifically spoof a very specific thing that you have to know to get it. If
they're propped up in the parodies. You know what? I enjoyed Meet the Spartans once, but I think that was just a moment in time for me, because I tried to watch it again and it was absolutely awful. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, and so if you're a really good action, if you're a really good parody movie, you should be able to stand on your own as a good film while still kind of paying wink, wink, nod, nod to these, like, cliches and tropes. But you also have to do it...
in a way that does wink, wink, nod, nod at the tropes.
Yeah, but you have to do it in a way that... You want somebody who's a fan of it, not necessarily somebody who's making fun of it. Like, you want somebody
Yeah,
and I think that's sometimes the difference between a... Well, that is the difference between a great parody and a terrible one. That you actually have... And, you know, like, the people... Like, Wes Craven made Scream, I believe. That was his genre of horror movies. I mean, he created Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
So, him doing that. It was like an upset to the genre that had kind of become still and stagnant, which Scream in and of itself kind of became after a while as well.
Yeah, I love the most recent Scream movie, by the way, since we're talking about Scream movies. I think it was Scream 5, how it was referential to all the other... Scream 4, how it was referential to all the other Scream movies becoming big. I thought that was a really funny way to do that.
Yeah.
What was I saying? Yeah, good... Yeah, as you said, good parodies have to... I think they have to stand on their own as good movies, even if you don't understand the references. Like, Shaun of the Dead is a parody of zombie movies. I hadn't seen a zombie movie before I watched Shaun of the Dead, and I thought it was hilarious. And same goes for Hot Fuzz. I didn't see all the 80s action movies, but I thought the fact that the movie referenced the beginning setup was so boring for a while and dragged on and had little bits of interesting and dragged on. And then the
you
end was
hate
amazing.
Boring beginnings, huh?
I know I'm absolutely contradicting myself with this.
You're the 10 minutes. You're Mr. 10 minutes.
That's very... I know, but I saw... Okay.
You
the difference was I went into Hot Fuzz as a comedy. Not an action
comedy.
Movie. It's kind of both.
It's both. Well, you can have an action comedy, but again...
Yeah, but I went into Die Hard with an action movie mindset, so I was waiting for the action to happen. With Hot Fuzz, I was a comedy, and I went in to see Simon Pegg and Nick... I can't remember his last name. Nick Frost. I went in to see Simon Pegg and Nick Frost interact, and I got plenty of that in the first half of the movie, so it was that was the funny part that held it up. And then the ending action sequences were legitimately good action sequences and can stand on their own as action, like, set pieces, while also being funny and calling back to everything in the beginning of the movie, which made it hilarious.
Yeah.
That's why I like that movie so much.
What would round that like your top three then?
Okay, let's see. Oh, we may have to cut some silence here while I think.
Actually, we will end here and we will talk about this some other time. I think an episode countdown.
Does Scott Pilgrim count as an action movie? Because that one was fantastic.
I think it's the
same director, so I'm kind of cheating here.
Yeah, we're going to cut here. We're going to wrap on Die Hard. I guess one final question before we wrap on Die Hard.
Go for it.
Do you, after watching it and kind of coming in, I know you kind of have this expectation because a lot of people told you this, and we kind of noted it at the start of the show. Do you consider Die Hard a Christmas movie? And to you, what makes a Christmas movie a Christmas movie, or a movie a Christmas movie, I should say?
I think it is a Christmas movie. Not strictly, like obviously less than Elf or something like that, but the atmosphere was Christmassy. It made sure it knew it took place on Christmas. The way they worked the Christmas music into the soundtrack, by the way, was great. I loved that. How you'd hear little, like, hints and bits of famous Christmas songs in the background while he was doing things. And it's a relationship story. It's about a family coming together, which is the sole crux. I mean, you know, not really about a family coming together, but at least the subplot running through it was it's bringing together him and kind of his kids, sort of, and his wife, mostly him and his wife. So bringing the family together is a very Christmassy theme. That's it. I guess that's – so yes.
Okay. I'm just curious because, I mean, it, you know, a lot of people say, haha, it's my favorite Christmas movie. And I do consider it a Christmas movie. Like you said, it's one that takes place at Christmas or Christmas Eve, mm-hmm. which I think is extremely important. And Christmas plays into the film aside from, oh, it's at Christmas time. I mean, one of the great throwaway scenes, or not throwaway scenes, one of my, you know, it's like, ho, 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 now I have a machine gun.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff like that. And, you know, like, that's the reason he's there. And like you said, it's a big thing about a family that's kind of broken up in a way because he lives in New York while his family moved out to LA and stuff like that, and they're on the rocks. So yeah, so that's Die Hard and Die Hard 2. We will be back sometime eventually. I honestly don't know because next week is, you know, Christmas Eve, Christmas yeah. Day, this and that, family, friends, all that, traveling, all that other stuff. So maybe we'll see if we can kind of plan something this weekend and do like two episodes and just be done for the rest of the year. If not, we'll see you in the new year. So for Sam and I, this has been Nerds on the Rocks episode 157.
Goodbye.
Well, well, well.
Welcome to the party, pal!
6-month backlog in New York scumbags I'm still trying to put behind bars.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
Who gives a fuck?
Yes, I was wrong about you. You're not such an
asshole! How's that, asshole?
Fucker.
Shh, it's okay. I've done this before.
I'm that fucking Energizer Bunny.
Listen to me.
This is
Sister Teresa called me Mr. McLean in the third grade.
Dickhead.
Friends call me John.
Fuck off.
You're neither, shithead.
Yeah, I got a deal for you.
But I let you live.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Oh!